Merkle Media.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary is Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Keith Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison? Swangles in Fort Lauderdale.
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on Rockfin, Odyssey, Band.video, Vigilante.tv, or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, thank you so much. Appreciate the support. If you like the show, you can rate it. You can share it with your friends. We appreciate that. If you want to connect with me, the website is theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. You can find me on Twitter at Macroaggressions. Hey, if you guys are going to be in the New York City area the weekend around September 11th, Saturday, September 9th, to be exact, 2023. Well, consider coming and checking us out. Free World NYC is an event being put on by Billy Ray Valentine. I'm going to be one of the speakers there. Gardner Goldsmith will be there. John Brisson, Tony Arterburn, Wayne McCroy, Don Jeffries, Richard Gage. We're all going to be there. We're all going to be speaking. It's an all-day event. There are tickets available at eventbrite.com if you just search Free World NYC, or you can just look in the description box for this episode. You'll find a link there. Come check it out. I think tickets are $71, $72, and it'll get you all day access in New York City. So it'll be an interesting event. Also, American Liberty Awards. What do you know? We got nominated three times. Best Analysis Broadcast, Best Info Bomb Creator, and Most Truth Revealing Book. I'm flattered to be nominated in any of those categories. It's really kind of fun for me. I don't have any particular... I'm not holding out any hope of winning any of these awards, but I don't give a shit. I'm just going to have fun at the event. It's going to be great. If you're going to be in Austin, Texas, or somewhere in the area on August 12th, Saturday, 6th Street, Austin, let's party, man. Get yourself some tickets. Go to AmericanLibertyAwards.com. You can get tickets there. You can also vote, too. Vote for all your favorite content creators, all the people that you've seen. I think there's like 20 categories. It should be fun event. If you're interested, come party in Austin. There's worse places to be on a Saturday night than downtown Austin during summer. Oh, my God. It's going to be fun. Thank you to our sponsors. They make the show happen. Chemical Free Body and Tim James and the crew over there make fantastic supplements. That's just all you need to know. In an industry where most people don't make them of high quality, they're very sketchy, the products don't work, they cost too much, whatever. Chemical Free Body is building fantastic supplements that do what they say they're going to do. I drink Green 85 every single day, and I will continue to because I feel good. And I think it helps me. And I think that if you're interested in improving your health, there's worse places to go than chemicalfreebody.com. And if you find something you like, use the promo code MACRO. That'll get you a discount on the way out. And I think if you order over $100, you get free shipping, something like that. But Tim has got all kinds of products and services over there. You can try Pat Miletich's new Super Soldier formula that he's got, or you can do the Detox Bundle, which I've done, which will clean you out. And you probably should do that every now and then just to change your oil and get all that garbage out of you. So go to Chemical Free Body, take a look around, see what you think. Promo code MACRO. Also, thanks Legal Shield. Been in business for half a century in Canada and the United States. A-plus rating with a Better Business Bureau. It's a company that helps you get access to high-powered lawyers in your area for a very, very reasonable price. $30 a month, dollar a day will get you in the door, get you access to an attorney that can help you out with a variety of things, all your paperwork needs, all of your medical directives, financial power of attorney, last will and testament. You got to have them. You just have to have them. If you're an adult and you're operating in this world with everything that can go wrong and you don't have those things and something happens to you, you're in trouble. You wind up in a hospital, they try to put you on a ventilator. You wind up dead, the state gets involved in your probate affairs. And listen, don't allow this stuff to happen. You can take care of this. It usually costs you a couple grand to take care of this paperwork with an attorney in your area, but if you sign up for a Legal Shield, you're going to have access to them for $30 a month. So just knock it all out in 1 month. Month one, knock it out, pay itself off for years and years and years. Plus, you'll have access to attorneys that can help you with a variety of things. So if you are interested, if you think this might be something up your alley, just go to the website and read about it first before you do anything. I think that's the best thing to do. www.don'tgetpushedaround.com is the domain specific to this site. You can find out all kinds of information. You can get yourself, if you carry a gun, there's documentation and paperwork you might want to look into over there. If you need IRS help with a W-2 for some sort of IRS audit, you're getting ready for trial for something, whatever, they've got it. Don'tgetpushedaround.com is the domain. Well, there's a group that we're going to talk about today. And normally banking's kind of boring. I promise you, this is the most interesting bank you'll ever hear about. It is the Deep State Bank, or at least it was, and it played a role in some of the most important events in American history, some really controversial events in American history, things like the Iran-Contra affair. You found fingerprints of people that were working with a bank, a particular bank. The bank is called BCCI. And this bank was it's Bank of Credit and Commerce International is the official name for it, but there is a different name for it. And most people didn't really refer to it as that. They knew it as BCCI. It jokingly came out later that it was Robert Gates, before he became Bush's CIA director, jokingly referred to the company as the Bank of Crooks and Criminals International before his appointment. But it just goes to show that everybody knew this was a dirty bank. Everybody knew. You know, so it was founded in 1972 in Pakistan with oil money by a guy named Aga Hassan Abidi, and started out with about $200 million of oil money that was looking for, it was just going to go into this BCCI bank, and it was going to help create basically a pirate bank. It was a bank that could be helpful for facilitating transactions that needed to, stay off the radar a little bit. It would be the bank that you would go to if you were a gangster. It was registered in the Cayman Islands and Luxembourg, but it was headquartered inside the city of London. Not to be confused with London itself. As you know, there is a subset, a Vatican-like entity, a Washington, D.C.-like entity that is a square mile? Kilometer? One square kilometer? Wouldn't be mile in UK. Have to be a square kilometer. I don't know. It's big. Called the City of London. And that is a city inside a city. It is a sovereign territory. There's a whole pomp and circumstance about when the Queen came by back before she turned and, you know, returned to her natural lizard form several months ago. But they would come by and there's some sort of like ceremony they had to do. The city of London, the mayor of the city of London had to like acknowledge her and grant her. I don't know, some fucking bullshit. But anyway, it's a banking haven inside of London. I've been there before. You can tell when you get into it because all the statues and all the artwork surrounding it all take on a lot of dragon symbology, which always made me think of like the stories of dragons guarding the gold. And I thought, well, that's where the gold is, or, you know, at least part of it. So the city of London has always been up to no good. And it, of course, if you're going to create the deepest deep state bank in the world, BCCI, you would have it running out of the city of London. That, of course, makes total sense. And you would have it registered in the Cayman Islands and Luxembourg. Cayman Islands, obviously, being a offshore banking colony, formerly under, well, I guess currently still under British control. Luxembourg is sort of its own little tiny entity that stays out of most business, you know, stays out of the news for geopolitics mostly, but really for business, you know who it is, because of that. It's known as also as a banking haven. So that's what they did. They, you know, you register your dirty bank in places that have favorable jurisdiction and banking rules, and then you branch out from there and say, all right, well, we're going to now franchise this thing and we're going to put it all over the world. And if we have any problems, well, listen, we're registered in these really murky banking havens where we can make it very difficult for people to find out information about who's involved in the bank, in part because the banking secrecy laws favor the banks in these jurisdictions. So that's the reason why you would, of course, do it. At one point, it was operating in 70 countries with 400 branches, but honestly, the branches themselves were just window dressing to give the appearance that it was a totally normal, boring bank. But in reality, they didn't need the money. They didn't start a bank to make money from customers' deposits. Like, oh, we're going to make all this money and people are going to deposit their paychecks and we're going to sign them up for a 401k or an IRA or something. They didn't give a shit about that. The public face of BCCI as this bank was just a disguise. You know, it was just there to so that it wouldn't alert or create suspicion as to why, well, you've got this bank that's got all this money and yet you have no branches anywhere. That's weird. So they did. They made sure that they put 400 branches out throughout the world to give the appearance that everything was on the up and up, when in actuality, it was a front company. And they stole their depositors' money and gave it to their 3,000 criminal clients. That's what was going on the whole time. I mean, the customer deposits were of course pilfered at some point, but the customers themselves, the general public customers that signed up and kept their money at a BCCI bank, those customers meant nothing to the owners of the bank. Listen, the current bank that you use, you mean nothing to them as well. They don't give a shit about you. They treat you as such. So this was just out in the open for anybody that that cared. But there were a million depositors. I mean, it wasn't nothing. There were quite a few people that were trusting this bank. They just kind of signed up and said, well, you know, listen, we can keep our, you know, I live around the corner and there's a branch right here and it seems like a logical place to, you know, and you don't suspect, I mean, you know, the banks are shady, but you don't expect them to be BCCI shady, but they were, and they held at one point about $20 billion in assets. Now we're talking 70s, 80s, you know, so $20 billion was $20 billion back then. And now it's, of course, you know, it's nothing it seems these days, but before the whole thing wound up coming to a close and imploding and getting shut down in 1991. Spoiler alert, it gets shut down in 1991. They'd managed to steal between $10 and $15 billion over the course of 20 years while this bank was in operation. So it was the bank robbery of the century. Nobody talks about it like that because they didn't need guns. They didn't come in with masks and say, put all the money in the bag or I'm going to shoot the security guard. They didn't need to. They had a much better plan for getting all this money out of it. And it involved lawyers and government officials and gangsters and blackmail and all that good stuff. If you were into money laundering, if you were into drug sales, if you were selling weapons, if you were moving anything, if you were selling kids, if you were selling kidneys, if you were selling anything that was on the black market, BCCI was the bank for you. They made sure it was a bank for gangsters, owned by gangsters. It was like the original FUBU, right? For us, by us. We're like, we're getting tired of trying to wash all this money through Wells Fargo. Fuck, let's open our own bank. And so that's what wound up happening. And it was the American deep state's own personal bank. But it was almost exclusively focused on international transactions. They found out that pretty early on, I mean, I think they knew this going into it, but they discovered it regardless. They knew that the American banking industry was going to be very difficult to deal with. And it was. And when I say difficult to deal with, it meant you couldn't just bribe them real easily. I mean, say what you want about the American banking industry being a house of cards and a Ponzi scheme and all of that. But apparently it wasn't as easy as you might think to just go up and say, hey, look the other way while we install this bank. There were regulations, there were rules, and there were people that wouldn't agree to it and couldn't be bought. So they had big problems issuing bribes in the United States. The other 69 different countries that they operated in, bribes were standard operating procedure. In fact, it was part of their business plan. I mean, they would tell people that they would pay them out, a commission, but the commission wasn't a legal commission. It was a bribe. So it was like when you say like, oh, BCCI might have used, you know, they might have had to bribe some people here and there. No, their business model was bribery. That was a core tenet of how they operated, was using bribery. They said, well, we're going to go into this country, we'll talk to the people at the central banks, and if we can get the central banks on board with us to send some of this money and to allow us to connect in this way, we'll pay them a commission. And you go, yeah, but you're not allowed to pay them a commission. That's the part that's bribery. And they go, well, call it what you will. The person who allows us access to this marketplace is going to get paid. And therefore, it's going to happen. So let's talk about who owned BCCI. Because I think if you understand a little bit about who's behind it, it might help you understand kind of what the plan was. So I mentioned it was founded in Pakistan. And that's where... it was founded there, but not based there. Based in London, of course, and run through all these different major banking hubs around the world. So it wasn't as if there was a secret that BCCI was out there. It was just everything that they were involved in was so opaque. You just had a hard time kind of, you know, understanding where the money was coming from. And I don't know. It started sending off alarm bells for people that were close to it early on. But again, the people that were close to it early on were criminals. And when they hear alarm bells, it's not, oh no, we have to stop this. It's, holy shit, how can I get in on this? This is the bank I've been looking for my whole life. You mean I can move my money? I can wash it easily through this. I mean, you guys have... listen, their job was money laundering. The whole existence of the bank was money laundering. So you didn't have to go in there as a criminal and kind of beat around the bush with the guy and say, well, I might, you know, I'd like to make this money look different. They go, we know what you want to do with it. We know why you're here. Fuck, we're the money laundering bank. This is why you're coming here. You don't have to speak in code here, whoever you are, some third world dictator that's in the process of cleaning out his country of all of their banking reserves and putting it in his personal account in the Cayman Islands. We know what you're doing. Cut the bullshit. Tell us how you want it. How you, what denominator you want, big bills or small bills? You know what I mean? There was no like, oh, let's just, I might want to see if you guys could help me expand my wealth. It's like, we know what you want done. You want us to launder the money. We're fine with that. We'll do it for you. We're going to take a cut, of course, but this is what we do. So secrecy is the key, of course. So that's why you register in Luxembourg. That's why you register in the Cayman Islands. I've been to the Cayman Islands, man. I remember going by in a cab, and this, and we were sort of stopped at a light, and this guy says, hey, see that, the cab driver says, see that building over there? I was like, yeah. He's like, there's like 30,000 companies that operate out of that one building. It was like a nondescript, like, strip mall. And I was, it wasn't like a 200-story high-rise building. It was like mailboxes, etc., or something, you know, like that. Like, it was a, literally like a strip mall type operation, no bigger than a liquor store. And the guy's like, there's like 30,000 companies that were operate out of that place over there. I was like, oh yeah? And he's like, yeah, it's one of the, you know, it's one of the hubs where they sort of like have the business entities sort of live there, you know, so to speak. So that's the Caymans for you, man. They can make a lot of money disappear. A sunny place for shady people is what they call it. Beautiful beach. Go to 7 Mile Beach. You'll never want to leave, especially if you're a drug trafficker, because they have some of the best secrecy laws in town. The Saudis had a huge ownership in this bank, of course. The King Fahd's banker bought 30% of BCCI for $1 billion investment. So, listen, you're talking about Pakistan. I mentioned it was started with oil proceeds. There's no difference here. The Saudis came in for a big stake. The rulers of the United Arab Emirates came in for a big stake. Dubai was involved. Abu Dhabi was involved. Sheikh Zayed of Abu Dhabi bought a huge ownership stake in this bank as well. So you've got the Gulf states taking charge in terms of ownership. But this was known as the CIA's bank. I mean, everybody knew it as the CIA's dirty bank. And but it didn't have a presence in the United States the way it did internationally. And that wasn't because there wasn't a ton of money in the United States to make. It's just that BCCI knew what they would be up against if they ever got into business inside the United States. They would go up against regulators. But, you know, their arrogance and their pride was their downfall, because they eventually forced their way into America, and that's when it all went awry. We'll get to that later on in the episode. But the owners ran BCCI the way the mafia would. I mean, they were international banking gangsters, so, like, they are the mafia. It's just not like Italianos, you know, having dinner at the you know, down in lower Manhattan somewhere. This was just happening on a much different scale. But these guys were every bit gangsters. You know, they just were banking gangsters, which means instead of, like, the pinstripes, stripe suits, they had the, you know, the real nice suits that they got, you know, from Sam's Tailor down on Nathan Road in Kowloon, you know, and they dip into Hong Kong and get themselves some real nice suits down there. But the gangsters, nonetheless, they thought like criminals. And from what I could determine when looking into this, they never pretended like this was anything other than a dirty bank. They weren't, you know, they weren't offering to hold your, you know, to have your kids come down and crack open the piggy bank and, like, sort of open up a savings account for your, you know, and teach them how the banking system. There was never any sort of pretense to this. They were straight up creating a criminal bank. And the fact that it lasted for almost two decades is amazing. But I guess, you know, that's what you get when the banking industry is regulated by other criminals. So you know, you can't really, I guess you can't really expect the criminals of Washington, D.C. to really be extremely enthusiastic to put the criminals of BCCI out of business, because they were using them too. They were deeply involved in them with washing their own dirty money. So it you know, the entire purpose of the bank was to participate in criminal behavior, and I assure you, they did not disappoint. But so let's talk about a little bit about this. Like, what did BCCI do? Okay, yeah, they're a criminal bank, and yes, they're laundering billions of dollars of money, but what does that mean? Like, let's talk about some examples, okay? Well, the CIA used a Pakistani branch of BCCI to funnel money all around the world. That was their favorite place. They went straight to the source, I guess, where it's
where it was started, but they were involved early on in Pakistan using that, the one of the branches there, to use that money for a variety of things, including bribery of officials. So it was extremely useful for that. But look, the truth is, when the investigators pulled this thing apart, like when they finally started digging into this, 1990, 91, it finally went away, like middle of 91, they were astonished at the size of this operation. They simply couldn't believe it was as big as it was. And the vast array of crimes that they were involved in, and like the audacity of operating this clearly criminal enterprise in broad daylight was stunning to them. The investigators just, they were sort of like handicapped by coming up against a conspiracy that was so monstrous that they just couldn't even believe that it is something this big existed. And yet here they were. And it did. And this is some of the things that they were using for. So Reagan's dirty CIA used BCCI to run weapons to Saddam Hussein during his war in the mid-80s against Iran, including chemical weapons. You know, they helped facilitate that those transactions where Saddam Hussein was buying chemical weapons. You know who helped him facilitate that? It was Donald Rumsfeld, because Rumsfeld had rotated out of the Nixon administration and had gone into private business in the chemical industry. And so during the 80s, when he was slinging aspartame for G.D. Searle and representing all these other chemical companies, he was dealing with Saddam Hussein. And Saddam Hussein was purchasing the chemical weapons that Rumsfeld was selling to them and using BCCI to do that. So any ideas or any sort of concepts that, like, maybe the American government wasn't really sure what this bank was used for, you can just set those aside and put those to rest, because everybody knew what was going on with the bank. Donald Rumsfeld knew what was going on with the bank in the early 80s when he was facilitating these transactions to Saddam Hussein, because that's who you're going to use. They provided Saddam Hussein with more than $4 billion in secret loans that were used to finance his war. And then Rumsfeld repaid him for this transaction by having him murdered 20 years later, which was nice. In the second Iraq war that Rummy had his grubby little psychopathic fingers in as well. They washed money for the Contras that helped to finance the war in Nicaragua. They just ran that through the Cayman Islands branch. That was easy. They used money run through their washing operations to finance Osama bin Laden's anti-Soviet operations in Afghanistan. You remember that? Before he totally took down three buildings with two planes with a bunch of unskilled pilots that had box cutters. Before he did that, before Tim Osman did that, he was working in Afghanistan at the behest of the CIA, being financed by the West to fight, to create the Mujahideen, to create a group of freedom fighters, a database of freedom fighters that would help the CIA fight this secret war in Afghanistan. A database that, you know, translates to Al-Qaeda, the base. The data, not the home base, but the database, the Al-Qaeda base, the Al-Qaeda database. That's all Saddam Hussein, or that's all Osama bin Laden. And while that was happening in the 80s, and for those of us that remember that, where they were bogging down the Soviet Union for 10 years in this unwinnable war in Afghanistan, the whole time that Osama bin Laden was running that operation and was being financed, the money that was flowing to him was coming through BCCI. That's how you did it when you're the CIA and you're covertly arming the Mujahideen in Afghanistan and using your assets, Tim Osman, and otherwise known as Osama bin Laden, and making sure that they had the finances that they needed for this war you had to do that off the books. And you did that in a variety of ways. And one of the ways in which you can't just go to Congress and say, we want money to destabilize the Soviet, I guess you could now, but back then you couldn't say that we want money to destabilize the Soviet Union. So give us $1 billion so that we can finance these guys and pretend like it's not us. And then they can fight the war for us. Congress isn't going to do that. You have to do it other ways. You have to launder money if you're the CIA. You have to sell drugs. You have to sell weapons. You have to sell kids. You have to sell helicopters. You can steal helicopters. You can steal airplanes, which the CIA does all the time, rebrands them and resells them. They're criminals. That's what they do. They're criminals. But you've got to have a bank. You can only do so much with a house filled to the ceiling with cash. You know, you can only buy so many tanks of gas or so many trips to the grocery store with all this cash. If you want to buy something that costs a lot of money, you're going to have to find a way to do it with wire transfers. And that's why they needed a bank like this. So they took money that the CIA black ops laundered through their drug proceeds coming out of Southeast Asia back in the Golden Triangle during the covert Laotian bombing campaign being overseen by super spook Ted Shackley. He's running that op while Kissinger's covertly bombing Laos, while the CIA is running the drugs out of there. And in order to do that, the banking establishment that was used to facilitate all of this was this bank. So that's part of the reason why the CIA was deeply involved in this. The Safari Club needed a banking network to finance and expand their operations. Peter Dale Scott, who coined the term deep state, refers to the Safari Club as the second CIA. And this is, if you don't know who the Safari Club, it's a group of intelligence, heads of intelligence for five different countries: Iran, Morocco, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, and France, right? So you've got the head of intelligence for all these countries, and they formed a group called the Safari Club. Well, the Safari Club was deeply in need of a bank like this. And so when you've got these intelligence directors, they were able to use it. So Egypt, you know, you've got the Suez Canal, you've got France, who's a member of the UN Security Council, that's important to have. You've got Iran, who's got the fourth most oil in the world. You've got Saudi Arabia, which obviously has all the oil, and you've got Bandar Bush and Bush family. Anyway, it's a deep state, dirty group, right, of intelligence assets that are well-financed and always looking to expand their operations, but you need a bank. And when you've got a good bank like this, then it starts to help you branch off, hide your activities, and grow your operations too, on top of that. BCCI was deeply involved. I think the component of it that the United States citizens would recognize, though they probably don't know the name BCCI. You know, it's not well known since it's been shut down for 30 years, but you would recognize the operations that it was deeply involved in. So like the 1980s Medellin cartel that was sending cocaine into America to MENA, Arkansas, it was being overseen by the American CIA, by Bush and his enterprise, his New World Order component, the enterprise. It was run through the Clintons and Bill Clinton in MENA, Arkansas. All of that money that was coming in, the cocaine was coming in, it was being sold, it was being turned into cash. That cash has to go somewhere. That cash was being sent to buy arms, and then those arms were being sent to the Contras in Nicaragua, because America was financing a covert war there to regime change the government of Nicaragua. And you couldn't go to Congress and just say, we need money for this regime change operation. They would say, we don't do that. You're not supposed to do that. So you have to, you can either stop, which isn't going to happen, or you can find a different way of financing your operations, a more off the books way of doing it. And of course, that's what they did. So this cycle of cocaine for for guns. And all of this was facilitated from BCCI. This was the American version of this got its first taste of this bank when dealing with, you know, the CIA, Bush Senior, Clinton, MENA, Arkansas, Barry Seal, Iran-Contra component, Oi North, all of this stuff, all tied into BCCI, right? Manuel Noriega was the bank's most well-known customer, just to kind of put it in perspective. And Noriega was, he really brought too much heat. They probably shouldn't have promoted the fact that he was their, you know, best customer, because when you do something like that, then the Justice Department gets involved, and the Justice Department's like, oh wait, you're doing business with Manuel Noriega. I mean, George H.W. Bush is doing business with Manuel Noriega as well, but he's known to be, you know, he was cooperating with us for a while, and then he got on the wrong side, and then next thing you know, he's public enemy number one. So we'll come back to why Manuel Noriega was the linchpin in the undoing of BCCI towards the end of this episode. But I want to continue to go into some of the activities that this bank was involved in. I mean, you got to give them credit. They were up to everything. There wasn't any aspect of criminality that these guys weren't deeply interested in being involved with. And I think that the names that you know sort of came into this orbit of the bank are some of the deep state players that you would recognize. In Monte Carlo, Adnan Khashoggi, uncle of Jamal Khashoggi. Adnan Khashoggi was a well-known arms dealer. I mean, it wasn't like he was like famous for being an arms dealer. It's always weird when you can be like a criminal and yet everybody knows who you are. You're really famous. That's how you know you're working with the USA if that happens. So he's Adnan Khashoggi is using the Monte Carlo branch of BCCI to facilitate the selling of TOW missiles with the help of Oi North. And then the proceeds of this are the funding mechanism that's being used for the Contras to fund the war. So that's what this bank was involved in. Don't ask, don't tell. The original don't ask, don't tell. Big time into terrorism financing, or, you know, if a dictator's looting his country, they'll help. You know, they'll be there to offload the airplane. Do you remember when Ferdinand Marcos was looting the Philippines as he was on his way out? You remember his wife Imelda had like 8,000 pairs of shoes and everything. I remember that there was concerns when his plane was leaving. I remember reading this later that there were concerns when his plane was leaving that it was too heavy. And I remember thinking, too heavy. It's like, he must be stealing a lot of stuff, you know, right? As he's on his way out. Well, he was stealing a lot of stuff. What he was stealing was gold. And there was concerns that the plane was so heavy that when it landed, wherever it landed, that it was going to blow out the wheels, and that that it was going to create a system where like the air brakes didn't work, and that it was going to be too much pressure and too much tonnage on the wheels. You know, that like I'm no aviation expert, but they do calculate that by the time the plane lands, it won't be as heavy as it is when it takes off, meaning it will have burned up all the fuel. But if you're just too heavy, then it might be too much for the brakes. But anyway, I remember Marco stealing all that. I mean, he fucking looted the Philippines, and BCCI was his bank to do all that. Just so you know, in case there's any questions as to what they're going, very customer service oriented, I might add. Ferdinand Marcos gave them 5 stars. That's for sure. They falsified transaction records to help people or corporations not pay taxes. That was one of the things BCCI did. That's based as hell. I got no problem with that. It's also totally illegal, which again, I'm not saying it's a bad thing that it's to not pay taxes, but just if you do it, if you go that route and you know it's illegal, and I know there's the argument that taxes are voluntary, but tell that to the people that are imprisoning you for not paying them, right? Explain that to the guy as he's bringing you your dinner behind bars. So they laundered tons of money. They helped. They changed transaction reports. They changed records to help to make corporations look like money was coming in when it wasn't, or going out when it shouldn't have been. And they got involved. They were really in. They were a full service fraudulent bank that would help with a variety of services that were needed. They laundered tons of drug money, obviously, from all over the world, and then used it to help covert intelligence groups and spinoffs from these groups start proxy wars all over the place. Now, you might say that, well, listen, this is just banking and who cares, you know, and you're laundering some money and in the end, it's all evil. But like a lot of this money was run through BCCI in order to get washed, you know, because they needed guys like a Marty Bird type in there to make sure that it was done the correct way, because they couldn't have people coming back and looking at the origins of this money, because the reason is the money that they were going to use was going to be used to start wars, okay, to start and finance uprisings in certain countries, regime change ops and things like that. You got a guy in office that we don't like. He doesn't work well with us, but we're going to finance his competitors. Maybe that works for a certain point, but he's still strong. Now we got to take him out. And so, you know, you can be dismissive of the dangers of banking, but a lot of times the proceeds from these banking operations have direct real world effects that include bombs, physical bombs dropping and human beings dying. So it's you know, I kind of like joke about it a little bit. It's like a dirty bank and they're up to no good and who cares, but I don't like the idea that the proceeds from these operations were used to harm people that were innocent. I don't give a shit if the Manuel Noriegas of the world find out that the CIA set him up and then trap him, put him in a cage for the rest of his life. I don't care about that. I do care about the families that have to live in the middle of a proxy war that are, you know, because America's trying to destabilize Nicaragua, and then you're a family that lives there, and now you're worried if you're going to have some death squad show up at your house the next, or in your village the following day. So I don't love that. That one of the things that BCCI was doing was something called straw men loans. Now this could be as complex as you needed it to be. It could be pretty straightforward, or it could be so complex that they're never going to figure it out. According to the Federal Reserve Investigators, there's a group called Federal Reserve Investigators. They should probably investigate themselves. Oh, something tells me they're not going to do this. But they were interviewed about this, or one of the guys that was deeply involved in this investigation was talking about the level of complexity for the BCCI operations. He said, well, if this were on a scale of 1 to 10, their level of complexity would be a 15. So he said that they used a variety of tactics that took them forever to figure out. In fact, they probably wouldn't have figured it out if they didn't have a couple guys in custody that they could lean on. So it was a very well done organization. You know, they weren't getting high on their own supply, so to speak. It was still run by smart people that knew how to make a move here or there, how to create a shell corporation, how to add additional, you know, how to throw people off the scent. They knew what they were doing. They're great at what they're doing. But listen, you can only run a criminal bank for so long before eventually people catch up. And that's what happened. And how it happened and why it happened was because they made the insane decision of doing what they knew they shouldn't have done in the first place, and that was getting involved in America, inside the United States, in a way, in a different way than they had before, in the retail banking component. So they wound up using an American bank called First American Bank to covertly move into the banking, American banking marketplace, a place they wanted to be for a long time. Obviously, we know there's a lot of money there, and they wanted it. And So they plotted and planned and schemed, and they covertly took over this First American Bank. But it's also how they wound up getting on the radar of district attorneys, because there were anomalies with this bank, and it didn't take long before the investigators figured it out. I mentioned that one of the things that BCCI was known for was paying bribes, and they certainly were. They bribed central bankers all over the place, every country that they went into. But they got busted bribing central bankers in Peru, which was usually their MO, that they would make the central banks a partner in their operations, and then they would pay the people that put the deals together a commission for putting the deal, for putting this partnership with BCCI and the central bank of the various countries, 70 countries in total that they wound up going into. 69 of them played ball, one of them did not. And they would make partners of the central banks and pay them this commission for the transaction fee of putting this deal together, but it was a bribe. Because you weren't allowed to pay them a fee to put this together. So this was done. It wasn't like this was done once or twice. It was done in every single country they were in. That was how they did it. That there was a method. You partner up with the central bank. You pay them bribes. You get them on your side. And next thing you know, they're involved. Now they can't blow the whistle on you because now they're involved. And that worked very well. They bribed everybody they could in Washington, D.C. Hell, they bribed Jimmy Carter. They sent $8 million to his campaign, which he took. He walked right into that trap. So they had everybody. And BCCI was once described as, quote, specializing in criminal activity. And you know what's funny about that description? That's an understatement. It wasn't that they, you know, specialized in criminal activity. That's all they did was criminal activity. All that pesky retail banking was just a front for them. They issued $2 billion in loans, and I use that term loosely because they were never intended to be paid back, to their inner circle. And many of the people that were in this inner circle of BCCI, Iran-Contra crew, the CIA, the MENA Arkansas group, you know, the Safari Club, all a lot of these people that BCCI had targeted in Washington, D.C. and in Wall Street and in the City of London internationally, a lot of these people were also deeply connected to Jeffrey Epstein. So I know that that's not going to be much of a surprise to people to hear that Jeffrey Epstein was involved in some sort of illicit banking scam. But yes, it is true. It is true. He was involved in that, because when you're washing money for people, you look around for the best options. Of course, he did have relationships with these other banks. We've watched that recently, his relationship with Jess Staley from Barclays and his relationship with other people, Jamie Dimon and Citigroup and all of these major Wall Street players. Epstein was deeply involved in that. He was operating in the 80s. He was operating, you know, when this would have happened. He was deeply involved with the Les Wexner component, as we know, as people know. But what people also don't probably know too much about Les Wexner, Jeffrey Epstein connection was that together they made the purchase of Southern Air Transport. Southern Air Transport was a private airport airline fleet that had been owned by front companies connected to the CIA. That it was the group that the CIA had used to fly drugs out of Southeast Asia during Vietnam. This is Air America. This was Southern Air Transport. So again, and what did we talk about? That group was using BCCI to wash money for them, and they were getting their drugs out through Southern Air Transport. And then years later, Jeffrey Epstein and Les Wexner buy Southern Air Transport, relocate it from South Florida to Columbus, Ohio, and claim that it's going to be used to fly cargo from Hong Kong for his limited brands. You know, he's flying his Victoria's Secrets and limited brands, and all this stuff is being made in Asia, and it's used to fly that in. Okay, I mean, maybe inside that big box with a bunch of G-strings and garter belts, you're going to find AK-47s or something. I mean, God knows they were moving things besides women's clothes, maybe even women themselves. I want to read an interesting quote from Jesse Helms. Jesse Helms was like I say, he's a senator out of in America back in like the 80s and 90s. And he said, he was in some, I don't know, some sort of House panel, something or other, talking about BCCI during these, I guess it might have been like early 90s, 1991, 92. Maybe they were having like the subcommittee on trying to get to the bottom of how this bank operated for as long as it did without anybody knowing about it. Wink, wink. And this is what Jesse Helms said. Just, I'm not going to do the Yosemite Sam voice, but he sounds like Yosemite Sam when he talks anyway. Just imagine, if you will, that we sat down and were writing a book, a novel about a group of arms traffickers and drug sluggers and terrorists and money launderers, and there were 3,000 of them. And suppose they had names like Noriega and Abu Nidal and Saddam Hussein. And suppose further that they wanted to start a full-service bank to advance their various enterprises. And suppose that they were smart enough to realize that a single bank in a single country with convenient banking laws would be too exposed and isolated to escape inquiry by a smart group of banking families. If you put all those little things in our scenario together, you come up with the founding concept of BCCI. So the question is, how did things end for BCCI? Well, in a word, poorly. It did not go well. You know, you can control people at the top. That's easy. The problem is controlling people at the bottom. The good guys, the guys that are in the operation, the guys that are the good cops that are in a precinct filled with bad cops. You know, there's some people that are just going to continue to try and do their job of stopping crime and what they're supposed to do. And what wound up happening with BCCI is that, you know, they had control of everybody, all the big name people in Washington and in the banking, you know, everybody knew who they were. CIA was deeply involved. Obviously, as we've mentioned, they were running arms for people like Khashoggi, and they were doing deals with known terrorists like Abu Nidal, and they were doing deals with Saddam Hussein and Manuel Noriega. As they said, these were their customers, but you can't control the low-level guys. And what happened was that an undercover customs agent cracked the case in Tampa, of all places, the BCCI sting operation there. Now, even though it was no secret that they were having image problems. Hell, BCCI was paying Hill and Knowlton $45,000 a month, a PR firm, to make it so that they didn't seem like they were running an outright money laundering operation, which of course they were. So they were trying to soften their image. It's kind of hard to do it when it's obvious what you're doing. So the money laundering really first gets detected in 1987 by investigators through on-site banking inspectors who noticed anomalies. And in 1988, BCCI was indicted for money laundering. Okay. And, but here's the thing. You've got to put it in context of the way American politics works, right? So BCCI gets indicted for money laundering. It's kind of a big deal. Then the Justice Department realizes, or knew all along, but now they have to acknowledge that BCCI exists, and oh, they're doing business with General Noriega, and he's a bad guy, and that's who we want. Because they don't give a shit about actually solving crime or putting an end to this. They want somebody that they can use to show that they're doing their job. They want somebody that they can you know, parade around the next election cycle and say, look what a great job we did. We got General Noriega off the streets. He was deeply involved in drug trafficking and arms dealing and all of this stuff. And he was working with this criminal bank, BCCI. And we indicted BCCI on money laundering. And what do you do to somebody when you want somebody else and you're the government? You say, let's make a deal. You play, let's make a deal. I don't really give a shit about you, though I can put you in prison. I really want the other person. You have information about the other person. If you give me the information on the other person that I want, I will make sure that you don't go to prison. How's that sound? And what did BCCI say? Fuck yeah, that works for us. You want General Noriega? Here you go. We'll set up a meeting. You can come pick him up. That's what they did. So they nabbed a few low-level BCCI people, right? They got a group that was, you know, like low-level paper pushers in this. They were running a $32 million cocaine money laundering operation. Not much, you know. I mean, $32 million in the 80s is a lot of money, but not the amount of money that was really kind of flowing through this bank. It wasn't a huge deal, but they did indict some low-level people. They never indicted the bank really for this. They indicted the bank on money laundering charges, but they focused on just the individual players, the low-level people. But the for the most part, the big power players avoided prison. They gave him a $15 million fine, which was a joke of a fine. They made way more money from the operation than they did from the fine. So the fine was more like a tip out, you know, just like, have a nice dinner, take care of your waitress on the way out for, you know, your criminal activity. So we'll wrap it up with this, I guess. The deep state swamp creatures to the rescue, right? So it's no surprise that all these deep state scumbag guys that you envision were deeply, you know, that were active in the 90s, you know, the people that were still involved today that were in politics 30 years ago back in the 90s. Well, guess what they were doing back in the 90s? They were cleaning up the mess made by BCCI. They were hiding things. They were going after them, but they were only sort of kind of going after them. You have, and I'm going to mention the two names that were involved in bringing BCCI to justice, and I use that term very loosely, inside America. And then you tell me whether or not you think that these two guys are actually going to do anything at all against a criminal bank that was definitely bribing all of the people in the deep state in Washington, D.C. The two guys from D.C., American politics, that you're going to put in charge of totally getting to the bottom of a banking mishap are Chuck Schumer and Robert Mueller, 1991. Both of those were the two guys that were in charge of that. Isn't that interesting? Wow. Was Satan unavailable to work on this case? I mean, Chuck fucking Schumer, really? Dual citizen Chuck Schumer still selling out this country to Israel? Fuck Chuck Schumer. Fuck Robert Mueller. We know all about him. He's the cleanup guy. He's the Clintons' cleanup specialist. And they bring him in to make sure that we get to the bottom of this and we start the investigation. And he makes sure that the investigation gets totally sidetracked, right? And that nothing gets done. And that this prosecution is handled in a way that he sees fit, which is low-level guys go to jail for little crimes and high-ranking people that are deeply involved with this disappear. You know, mistakes were made. So he was in charge of indictments, which means that he's part of the cover-up squad. Robert Mueller is always part of the cover-up squad. Who was named head of the FBI 1 week before 9/11? Who? Robert Mueller. Do you know why? Because he's the head of the cleanup squad. That's what he does. He covers up the deep state's shit. That's what he does. That's what he did with BCCI. That's what he did with 9/11. That's what he does. And he's good at it. And he's trusted. So with all of this that I've just mentioned, all of the nonsense that BCCI was involved in America, the money laundering, the Iran-Contra affair, the MENA Arkansas drug trafficking importation that was going on, the arms deals, all of this stuff, the financing money to the Soviets or to the Afghanis to fight the Soviets in Afghanistan in the age, all of this stuff that included Americans, not a single American was ever indicted. Just so you know. You know why? Because Robert Mueller is great at his job. Just the Medellin cartel money launderers got popped for this. The investigation was, tepid at best. Not a ton of enthusiasm to really investigate this. I wonder why that is. I wonder why, because everybody with so much power was in a position to get busted for something like this was using their power to make sure that there were no investigations into this situation. Because an investigation into this situation would have uncovered exactly what was going on. So we cannot have people looking into this bank any further. And the people that were in position of power to make that happen made sure it didn't happen. You can't take a look. Many favors were called in. Many threats were made. Okay. This was a big deal. You don't want to get busted in this one. The founder, Abidi, was indicted on bribery and fraud charges. BCCI was fined $200 million by the Federal Reserve Board for violations of plotting covert infiltration of the banking industry. They're like, that's our job, right? So the regulators prevented that from happening. The regulators did catch BCCI, surprisingly, right? Robert Morgenthau was tasked with investigating the bank in the fall of 1990. And the bank was forced into liquidation in 1991 in Luxembourg and Hong Kong and the London offices. All of that happened on July 5th of 1991. So that's the story of BCCI. You know, the shadiest bank in the world was officially out of business after running from 1972 to 1991, just about 20 years, but not before putting $2 billion of 1980s money into the hands of some very powerful people and washing untold billions of dollars for, in drug money, sex trafficking money, diamond money, human trafficking money, organ harvesting money, arms sales money, and like you name it, whatever illicit industry it came from, that this was the bank that was more than happy to wash it for the super rich. So, hey, look, they didn't call it the Bank for Crooks and Criminals International for nothing. You know what I mean? Hey, if you like this episode, take the additional step right now of sharing it with your friends and family. You can find me on Twitter at Macroaggression and on Instagram at Macroaggressions Podcast. The website, the octopus of globalcontrol.com. Thanks, everybody. I'll talk to you again soon.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
Hey, it's Austin James. Yes, I'm living with diabetes, but it doesn't have to define me. Thanks to the Freestyle Libre 3 Plus sensor, I get real-time glucose readings throughout the day. The Freestyle Libre 3 Plus sensor is small and easy to wear, giving me the freedom to focus on my life as a parent and a musician. Now this is progress. you can get a free sensor at freestylelibre.us.
Offer available for people who qualify. Visit myfreestyle.us to see all terms and conditions. Certain exclusions apply. Data on file, Abbott Diabetes Care, for prescription only. Safety info found at freestylelibre.us.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.